Members, we'll get going. We don't have a quorum yet, but we do have a long agenda. So I think Director Hirsch or Mr. Meyer, Director Hirsch, are you on? Members, we're going to do a walkthrough of the DNR AIS bill. It's House File 2153. I just introduced it a couple of days ago, just real quick, as soon as the administration released it. I introduced it. So anybody that wants to sign on, it is there. Just go ahead and sign on either via email or catch me on the floor today. And then we're going to do some public testimony after that. There's a few members, and Representative Depke wanted to come down and speak just a few words. So we'll catch them. That will be after the DNR. And then we will, Mr. Hirsch, I believe you're going to do a quick walkthrough of the long-term funding. We have a handout that's very beneficial, folks, and it talks about how expensive some of these different ideas could be. And then Representative Lagunias will do her water surcharge bill. That's the boat fee, commonly called. And then we'll move into the Corps of Engineers. We're very grateful that they're here to throw a bunch of cold water on our efforts to take care of Asian carp. I'm being a little bit of a smart aleck, but unfortunately, we may get a little cold water on our efforts there. Welcome, Mr. Any questions by anybody? All right, thank you. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize for being a little bit late, but I know in some of the other committees we've gone through bonding requests, and maybe you mentioned this earlier today, but kind of a schedule on when we might be hearing some of those things. I know we had a presentation from DNR and the Capital Investment Committee yesterday, but just checking kind of on schedule.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. It looks like it's about 2 weeks out. I think we're going to do some permitting issues. Representative Fabian's got a bill. I believe it's finally introduced. I have a number now. It does have a number, and so I think we'll be moving into that from where we're at now, and then we will get bonding. So we will be catching it, and we are in contact with Representative Howes, Chairman Howes, and his staff on the timing so that we're not part of slowing down the process. Thank you for the question. We do have a quorum. I'll call the meeting to order. Welcome, Director Hirsch. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members, Steve Hirsch, Director of DNR Ecological and Water Resources. And Mr. Chairman, I can go through the long-term funding needs just to clarify what you want me to do. Would you like me to give a summary of the change item and budget needs, or just go through the last part of the report on the table that shows what the statewide prevention programs might cost?
Director Hirsch, we would prefer the last part of the report. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So if you go to the report, at very last page, page 6, there is a table there that talks about preliminary costs, emphasize the word preliminary. These are estimates at this point of several different statewide prevention strategies. And the reason we had this a contractor figure this out and do this for us as part of this report is because there's been a lot of discussion over the last couple of years about the need to do more on a statewide basis and be more comprehensive. But it occurred to us in DNR that a lot of this discussion was going on with a lack of information about what it would actually take to do this. And so that was the main impetus for trying to get some of this information out there. So if you look at this table on page 6, there's a number of different strategies there with associated costs. And I'll just very briefly describe those strategies, what the differences are. The Red Lake, Blue Lake strategy is one that's been talked about for a while. And this is one where if you were on a lake with zebra mussels, you would have a red sticker. And that red sticker would allow you to go on any lake with zebra mussels, but not to any lake without zebra mussels. And if you wanted to go to a lake that didn't have zebra mussels, you would have to go to an inspection station, get inspected, get the verification that you were clean, and then you would be able to go to a lake that didn't have zebra mussels, and you would have a blue sticker. And conversely, if you had a blue sticker on your boat and wanted to go to a lake that didn't have zebra mussels, or that did have zebra mussels, you would have to go in to the inspection station and get a red sticker. And so you can see the cost of that per year comes out to about $22 to $28 million. This strategy has some advantages to it. It covers all accesses equally, private access, multiple ownerships of public accesses. It doesn't really matter where you go on and off. and it covers out-of-state borders. It has one of the main drawbacks, anyways, is you really have to address just one species. You can't address all species comprehensively because it would quickly become too complicated if you were looking at different color combinations for every combination of invasive species that was out there in our lakes. The next option is the option where basically you would have to be inspected before you launched at any access on the state. Of course, this is very, very expensive, probably prohibitively expensive because of the nature of our resource here with lots of lakes, lots of dispersed access, public and private, multiple ownerships of public access. And so you can see the cost there over $500 million a year is very, very high. The next one is a similar strategy, but here, instead of having an inspection at every access, you would have centralized inspection stations, so you gain some efficiency there by having centralized inspection stations across the state. But still, the requirement would be that you would have to go to one of these before you launched, and there the cost ranges from a little over $40 million to $60 million a year. The next strategy is basically the same as the strategy above, but would utilize some additional RFID or radio frequency identification technology, and that has somewhat higher cost the first year for getting the infrastructure in place to be able to use that technology, and then a similar cost in subsequent years to the option before it. The next one would focus on just having inspections at lakes with zebra mussels, and so this again is inspectors at every access but only on zebra mussel lakes, so it's higher than the centralized inspection station approach in cost, but not as high as having, of course, of having inspectors at every access throughout the state. And then the next option, the $10 million a year, is just to set up containment zones. This wouldn't be as comprehensive, but this would be a strategy where basically you would take some of the very high-use lakes in the state that have zebra mussels, the Mille Lacs, the Minnetonkas, and so on, and try to set up some sort of containment strategy where people coming off they were checked at strategic pinch points, and that has a cost of about $10 million a year. And then finally, the last option is a little bit different option, and is actually one that we've got some version of in our policy bill, and that's to have some sort of a certification program where people that are boating or trailering boats are required to take some sort of training and get certified, so there's some guarantee that they've at least been exposed to the issues there and they know what the BMPs are. So that basically is the summary of that table on that page, and then I can answer any questions.
Members, any questions in regards to the table? This is a real important table. Just for members to know, we have a number of constituents bring questions forward about some of these proposals, and it does put a very broad price tag on some of the different ideas, because oftentimes they compare us to Lake Tahoe and Colorado, which both have blanket requirements in their state, but they don't have, they're not the land of 10,000 lakes, which really is 15,000. So it has different challenges here in Minnesota. So it's a good chart. I would recommend that members keep it before them. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hirsch, in developing these numbers, does this include both initiation and maintenance of the effort? That's the first question. And then the second question is, do they... The chair talked about Lake Tahoe, but in terms of developing these numbers, how did you develop the numbers? With input from the other states, or and if it's from an initiation program or mature programs?
Director Hirsch.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and Representative Hansen, the answer to your first question is yes. However, I want to point out again that these numbers are preliminary estimates, and we actually, in getting into your second question, we actually contracted out to have this report done and have these cost estimates developed. They did look at cost for other states, but they also had to look, obviously, at what we had here for accesses. You know, our feeling is that this gives us a good ballpark on the potential relative costs of these different strategies, but if we were really going to seriously pursue any one of them, then we would have to do a little bit more detailed analysis of what it would actually take. But the costs are intended to include both the startup and then the maintenance of the programs. One of the things that, it mentions in the report also is that there's potential for privatization on many of these options, and that would that could change the cost, and it would also shift the cost. The, if things were privatized, the agency wouldn't need as much money, but then people would be getting charged by the private vendors that were providing the service, at least presumably. So those are just some additional considerations.
Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hirsch, did you look at maybe some other models that we have with terrestrial species, or I'm thinking of the noxious weed law that we had in the state for decades, that had a responsibility with landowners and then local governments and state involvement, trying to manage infestations. It's pretty detailed regulatory structure. Did you look at that or any other models that are out there that we've used for other things in the past?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Hanson, we did not. The models that we looked at are the ones that are listed on the table.
Thank you. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I have the watercraft fee.
Representative Wagenius, could you put on your mic? Thank you. I don't like being bossy, sorry.
Members, I have the watercraft fee bill coming up, and it's a bill I'm glad to carry. However, what is missing in the bill is some sort of consensus about what we actually want. So it's hard to price fees out until we know what we are expecting of DNR. So I know my bill comes up much later, but I would ask that we try to come to a consensus about what we want DNR to do, and then send that bill back to DNR for pricing.
That's a good idea, Representative Wagenius. We'll get into that more in a little bit. Thank you. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hirsch, just a couple of things. When you were taking a look at what they do in other states, do you have data that tells us how successful or unsuccessful they've been in fighting things like zebra mussels?
Director Hirsch.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman and Representative Fabian, I think that data is available. You know, a lot of the states, the western states, some of them anyways, have had comprehensive programs in place for a while. I don't know off the top of my head if they've still had infestations in spite of that or not. I think they have been fairly successful. They're fairly comprehensive, but as the chair pointed out, they have a much different situation than we do.
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and that kind of follows along on my question to Mr. Hirsch. These numbers are staggering, and in your opinion, choosing any one of them, even the one for $600 million, would that stop the spread, or how effective have you ranked these in terms of percentage of control, or have you looked at that type of thing?
Director Hirsch.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Anderson, we haven't done a formal ranking. There is a discussion, a report about pros and cons, and then we do intend to elaborate a little bit on that to give better information about what people could expect to get for this type of expenditure. I think any of these strategies would improve our ability to stop the spread. I don't know, it's just in general, with invasive species, there just are no silver bullets. You just don't stop them dead in their tracks statewide, no matter how much effort. But certainly, any of these strategies would be an improvement. Some would be more effective than others. And we do plan on trying to get kind of a table of pros and cons, and so people can really look at it in a very summarized fashion and get a better sense of what the relative trade-offs would be. So.
Thank you. Representative Hanson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hirsch, looking through the report, it kind of focuses on watercraft, canoes to boats, but it doesn't talk about docks very much. And looking at, as Representative Anderson said, these staggering figures for cost, I'm looking at how do you triage things. I think in earlier presentations we've heard about dock movement as being a significant threat. There are clearly fewer docks than there are boats, and the risk may be higher for moving with zebra mussels. What is the cost if we had maybe a dock tagging program or some regulatory framework for preventing dock movement or some inspection of moving docks, if that was a smaller segment here, that is there a cost figure on that, or did you look at that?
Director Hirsch, I don't have any other questions in regards to your long-term funding, and this kind of moves in, so if you want to, you're going to do a walkthrough of the your AIS language, that's your plan, the House File 2153, and if you want to address Representative Hansen's point about the docks, but maybe you also could touch on the whole dock part of that bill if you want to now. So why don't you feel that we'll move right into that, and that's a good introduction and one of the big parts, if I'm not mistaken, of House File 2153. Director Hirsch.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, we have not looked at the exact cost of having a comprehensive dock tagging or boat lift tagging program. As the Chair pointed out, we do have a provision I'll describe in a second in our policy bill. And the other thing, I think, as you know, we did last year is we now require training and permitting for lake service providers, which are people that move docks and boat lifts for a living. But it's an excellent point. You know, we can do a lot at the accesses, but there's far less movement of docks and boat lifts. But in my opinion, particularly for zebra mussels, they're probably a much more likely way that zebra mussels get spread. And so it's a good point.
Director Hirsch, can I follow up on Representative Hansen? Do you have a comprehensive list of lake shore homeowners? Does the DNR even have the ability to just contact those people by snail mail? I would imagine is the only way feasible. Do you even know who they all are to be able to let them know the seriousness of this, or do you just have to use the public media?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure. I think it's possible that at the county level that they might know who has lakeshore property, and that we could maybe get through that means, but I'm just not entirely sure.
Okay, thank you. Why don't you go ahead with your walkthrough on House File 2153 at a high level.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So if you have the bill in front of you, then the AIS language basically starts at the very bottom of page 3, but the first substantive thing then would be on page 4. And this is the first provision would just exclude portable bait containers from having to be emptied of water during the ice fishing season. The risk here of spread is very, very low, and it's very difficult to have water and transfer water from bait buckets in the wintertime. So we just think that's a provision that makes the overall law on draining water more reasonable. And then the next provision is the one that the Chair spoke of that would require basically a minimum 21-day waiting period before you move a boat lift or a dock or other water-related equipment, except for boats, from one water body to another. Then getting into Section 6 of the bill, inspector authority, we want in the first part there in Subdivision 2, we think we've got this already, but we just want it to be very clear that the DNR can delegate the inspection authority that's described in the subdivision to local units of government and tribal governments. Then going on to page 5, there's a provision there, lines 5.7 to 5.9, that basically would allow our conservation officers to order water-related equipment to be removed from a water body if we need to do it to implement aquatic invasive species control measures. And this was a result of situations we ran into last year with the infestations on Rose and Irene Lakes, where we realized it would have been better to be able to do that to facilitate both looking for the extent of the zebra mussel infestation and then doing the control work. And then the next section, starting on lines 5.1, this would give the DNR authority to require mandatory inspections prior to launch, and also to be able to set up centralized inspection stations. As you saw from the previous report, we don't have the means to do this yet. We don't have the dollars to do this, but we thought it would be a good idea to not let the authority be the holdup if we do want to get into a more statewide a comprehensive control program. Then getting down to line 5.21, it would then allow us to delegate the same authority to local units of government. And we've had there's some energy around some local units of government to take more active role in aquatic invasive species management. In particular, all year long, all last year and this year, we've been working with Minnehaha Creek Watershed District on a program that they want to implement. So we wanted to make sure that, again, a lack of authority wasn't an impediment to having a local unit of government implement something if they wanted to. But I want to stress that this isn't intended to be a mandate for local units of government. This is strictly local units of government that want to do something, and then we would be able to delegate this authority. Getting into Section 7, this is the penalty provision. Basically, it doubles penalties. This is similar to the provisions that we had in last year's bill that didn't go forward. There's still a lot of interest in having higher penalties for AIS violations. The one thing I might point out on lines 6.3 and 6.31, this is just to be able to make a failure to pull the drain plug or drain water-related equipment, the ability to have the field issue a civil citation for that. And getting on, we skip a couple sections then, and getting into Section 11. This would be, actually Sections 11 and 12. This would be an online training program that would be required for anybody trailering watercraft. It would be an online training program to alert people to the issues with aquatic invasive species and what they need to do to stop spreading them. And then I think there's just one more provision, and that's Section 15, and that's just a technical change to some of the prohibitions around having frozen bait. Which can be a carrier of viral VHS, viral hemorrhagic septicemia. So that's a high-level walkthrough of the policy language.
Questions, members? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hirsch, on Section 11, the commissioner shall establish a statewide course, and I know there's been some discussion about other courses, but have you talked with the University of Minnesota or the Minsku campuses as potential folks doing that, or is that, would this be involving the DNR creating a whole new program?
Director Hirsch.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman, Representative Hansen, we haven't gotten that far along in our discussions about this. Preliminarily, the concept would be to get a vendor, to contract with a vendor to make the course available. We would provide the supporting materials, some of the content needed, but we haven't gotten that far along in our discussions. So.
Thank you. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hirsch, on page 5 of the bill, you make references there about the commissioner being able to require mandatory inspections and then also being able to authorize different local government units to do mandatory inspections. Is it the state's ultimate responsibility, or do we somehow have in statute the ability for local governments to start some of this stuff even without the DNR being involved? Lake authorities, county commissions, are there other ways to attack this?
Director Hirsch.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Fabian, possibly. You know, it has to do with what are the various authorities of the watershed districts and the counties already, and I am not well versed in that. In some of the work that we've been doing with Minnehaha Creek Watershed District, though, it seems as though it's not clear that they have the authority to do everything they want to do, and it doesn't seem that we have the authority to allow them to do everything they want to do. So we're trying to clarify that to some extent and make it so that that's not the holdup.
Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hirsch, the reason I ask is because it would seem to me to make sense that local people would be able to do a fairly effective job more quickly just because there's not as much bureaucracy or whatever to get some of these programs started, to be able to have an impact on a local lake, particularly some smaller lakes that have really fairly limited number of accesses and so forth. So that's my reason for making the point. We need to find a way to get more local people involved in these things.
Thank you. Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Mr. Chair. Director Hirsch, I'm looking at page 4, the subdivision on inspector authority, and I'm glad you mentioned that this wouldn't be a mandate for local governments.
But would you envision any scenario where the DNR may transfer some funding or help local units of government if they would choose to take this up on a local level?
Director Hirsch.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Anderson, certainly, and we already do a little bit of that through a grant program. Now, the money we provide is usually admittedly a small percentage of the total that's needed, but certainly that could be one strategy.
Thank you. Representative Torkelson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Hirsch, for being here this morning. Have you taken a look at what our neighboring states are doing in along these lines, and does this match up with efforts in other states?
Director Hirsch.
And Mr. Chairman, Representative Torkelson, we've sent staff out to some of the western states to learn about how they do their programs. We have a more well-developed program than the other Midwestern states that are more comparable to our resource. So we've gone out to the western states and actually had staff go take some of their training and work with their crews to see how it's done. And now, you know, I think that information is helpful, but as has been pointed out earlier, it's not directly transferable to our situation, so we need to figure out how to adapt what they do to our situation.
Follow-up, President Tarkin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Hirsch, how does this, do you feel this program be effective for boats that are coming in from out of state into Minnesota?
Director Hirsch.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Thorpson, that's a good question, and it really depends on which strategy is being used. But in general, you know, if you have inspections at access points, then out-of-state boaters would be subject to those inspections the same as in-state boaters. None of these strategies involve trying to automatically get people that are coming from another state, you know, when they enter the state at the border or anything like that. But if you're, you know, for example, the Red Lake, Blue Lake strategy, if you have to have one of those stickers, it doesn't matter whether you're from out of state or in state, it would apply to all people equally. So most of the strategies, I think, would capture out of state voters equally well.
Follow up, Representative Tark.
Thank you. Just one more point. The boat plug issue, if you're from out of state, coming to Minnesota with a boat and you have your plug in, would you be subject to the penalty for having a plug in your boat?
Director Hirsch.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Torkelson, I believe the answer to that is yes.
Thank you. And I see enforcement nodding in confirmation, so that is true. Next is Representative Lagunias.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm looking on page, I have two different questions. I'm looking on page four that says that you have to wait for 21 days before you move a dock to another water. And if you don't wait 21 days, what's the consequence, and how do we know?
Director Hirsch.
Well, Mr. Chairman and Representative Lagunias, it would be a violation then. It would be similar to other violations of the law. How do we know? Yeah, we're not going to be able to spot everybody that's potentially moving a boat lift. But, you know, if we do, it would be an enforcement issue where they question how long has it been out of the water. You know, you have some indication basically on the condition of the thing. If there's moist areas on it still, or zebra mussels that look like they're still alive, you know, that would certainly be one indication. But it wouldn't be the easiest thing to enforce.
Follow up, Representative Lagunias.
Yes. Okay. These are businesses that do this. These are businesses that should have insurance or bonds. And it seems to me that they could be part of our enforcement mechanism if we required them to have bonds or insurance, that if they violated it, they'd have to pay. Because the consequences of them doing it are far more than the little fines that we have. So the fines, you might make a business decision that it's the cheap fine is so cheap that I might as well just, you know, not wait 21 days, because the fine is not a deterrent here. It may be for an individual, but when you're running a business, so it seems to me that we have to have a different set of fining systems here, or perhaps require bonds. So I think we need a little more imagination in this in this particular
Comment on Representative Wagenius's point, Director Hirsch.
Mr. Chair and Representative Wagenius, the only comment I would make is there is currently a provision in 84D that allows us to capture costs that are, if somebody, you know, not just a lake service provider, but if somebody does cause an infestation and we document it, there is a provision. For example, if we go in and have to do control to try to eliminate the infestation, there's a provision that would allow us to make that part of the penalty, the payment for the control costs. So we have something like that already, but it's not quite as comprehensive as what you were talking about.
To that point, Director Hirsch, we had, I believe, two different infestations this summer. Did you back charge either one of those known property owners for putting that infested boat lift or dock lift in the water?
Mr. Chairman, I know we've discussed it, but I'm not up on the current status of both of those investigations.
If it is something you can disclose to the public, I'd like you to bring that to a future meeting, or if you know. Follow up, Representative Wagenius.
I'd like to ask another question.
Go ahead, Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, on following up on what Representative Fabian said about getting local people involved, it would seem to me that if we had more watershed districts, that would be a great group of folks because that would be their focus. And I see the Minnehaha Watershed District, at least their representatives were here before, and I was wondering if they were going to be testifying about what they're doing and if that might be a model.
Representative Wagenius, we do not have them on the list, but some of the speakers are from that watershed, some of the citizens that want to speak, and I believe they may bring up some of the points you're wondering about.
Thank you.
Okay. Next I have Representative Hancock, Draskowski, Falcon, Quam. Representative Hancock.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hirsch, I'm looking at page 6 with the civil penalties, and the philosophy here seems to be that the higher we make the penalty, the more that we're going to have people readily do the practices that are that we're after. It seems to me that not yourself, but one of the officers was saying that in 2010 we predominantly were giving warnings and as opposed to citations. I don't remember the numbers, but 350 to 50. And the rate of violation was roughly 18%. The following year, if I remember the stats right, and these are not specific quotes, but it was almost reversed to where we had 300 and some citations and 50 some warnings. And the rate of transgression, so to speak, was 19%. So my question, it really is the amount of fine, I think this is more of an education issue than a desiring to violate the regulations here. And I'm a little concerned that we don't put too much emphasis into enforcing laws and thinking that that's going to cure our problem. It may generate some more money so that we can combat the problem. But it's not like you're poaching fish. And you're weighing how much the fine is going to be and how much the reward is. I think most people here that are in violation are probably unaware that they're in violation. I could see some heavy fines for repeat offenders, but I think by and large it's more of a education issue that we're after there. I guess there was more comments than questions, but any reactions to that?
Director Hirsch.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hancock, those are certainly valid points. You know, we think it's a combination. Certainly education is key. Fines are part of it, and enforcement officers will be able to speak better to this than me with their direct experience. But, you know, when somebody gets fined, they remember that and they talk to people. So I think that's also an incentive. I certainly agree that it's not the entire answer, and we're not just going to get there by continually increasing fines. But I do think it's one of the things, and what's been pointed out to us a number of times by constituents is that they're just not, the fines right now aren't commensurate with the potential damage that can be done. So if somebody you know, catches a few extra walleyes in the limit. Granted, that's not a behavior we want to condone in any way, but you compare that to, you know, introducing zebra mussels into a lake, and it's a, that's a whole different realm of environmental effects. So.
Thank you. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I struggle with what I'm reading here. I remember last year entertaining what seems to be the precursor to many of these provisions, and I remember the debate around it. I remember discussion about, we're going to bring forward these volunteers, and they're going to inspect these people, and we're really not going to enforce these particular things. We're just going to, use this as an educational opportunity. Well, members, here is the next generation, apparently coming from the department, and the answer is to create more government. Very, very troubling. We have bait buckets. If you don't throw out the water out of your bait bucket, and I don't remember exactly what the penalty is, when you're ice fishing, you're in violation. Mr. Hirsch, the local authority for the local units of government, your comments were it's not a new mandate. I think a good number of us have been around the block enough to know that what these turn into is an unfunded situation at the local level. The taxpayers fund them too, and some of those taxpayer dollars actually flow through this legislature. I think it's short-sighted to believe that it's not, again, probably the precursor to a local mandate. And we are looking at, I'm just troubled. We're collecting $200 million a year from the taxpayers of Minnesota to protect our resources, and our reaction as a government to this is to create more government and tell them what they can do. We're gonna go out and police them on the water and pull them off the water because, I don't know, their boat doesn't look correct or they're suspect by our government? I'm sorry for getting in a rant here, Mr. Hirsch, but I guess I'm just troubled by this. I'm curious, could you review for us where these proposals came from again, how they got before us today? Is it the same statewide group that was presented to us last year to be a large statewide broad representative group of Minnesota that ended up being 22 people? Could you let us know if that's the same large statewide group that brought this forward?
Director Hirsch.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Drazkowski, it was a number of things, I think, and I'll try to hit on a few of them. Some of it was just the experiences over the past year that we had with some of the infestations on particularly Rose and Irene Lakes that gave rise to the provision on boat lifts. And then, you know, again, the local government piece was really about, you know, we've got some local governments, admittedly, that they think this is DNR's job and they don't want to get into it. And we are not in any way trying to say that they should or force them to, but we've got other local governments that have a lot of energy around this. A lot of them don't think we're doing enough at the state level, at the DNR level, and we don't want the lack of authority to be an impediment. So it was really much more about that, and having worked with some of these local units of government, I've talked a lot with a lot of the different watershed district people, and they do have a lot of energy to try to do something more. It's very difficult to do some of this on a statewide level because of the huge amount of resources the chair pointed out earlier. So another alternative is to try to get as many partners as we can to just work together and try to do it on a more localized scale. And we're not trying to force local governments or local citizens to do it, but we don't want to be an impediment to them doing it.
Representative Drazkowski, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Mr. Hirsch, I think what that manifests itself to be eventually is local governments all over and around these areas engaged in this and growing. And we can't afford more government as a solution to this. But the end of my question was exactly where did this come from? How did it? What's the genesis of this proposal today? And how did we get this big, thick proposal of the government coming in and trying to tell Minnesotans what they can't do? When we understood that last year was the solution, that those of us that went along with yielding the individual liberties of Minnesotans to the government to the extent we did. We believe that that was the solution. And where did this next generation come from?
Director Hirsch. Mr. Chairman and Representative Jaskowski, sorry, I missed that part of the question. This is, again, it's a combination of things. We certainly have been in continued contact with stakeholder group. That stakeholder group continues to grow. It gets broader and broader. And certainly a lot of the discussions we've had with them have influenced this, although I would say also it's been just as much a product of our discussions with some of the representatives of local units of government. Trying to remember what the other part of your question was.
Representative Jaskowski, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Mr. Hirsch, the rest of the question was exactly how it got here. Yeah. But I'm curious also about the stakeholder group. You know, it was defined or described to us last year as a broad group representing the broad interests of Minnesotans, and it was. And when I followed up and asked how many people were on the group, it was 22.
Director
now,
Hirsch.
that's not a broad group, and so. I'd like to know more about that group.
Director Hirsch.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Jaskowski, the group itself was a cross section. If by broad you mean large numbers of people, you're correct. It wasn't large numbers of people, but it was a pretty good cross section of different interests. There just have been more and more people that it's not really a formal group anymore. There are more and more people that have been interested in this, more people from lake associations, from angling groups, from conservation organizations that have gotten involved. We see a need to try to formalize that a little bit and figure out what a more formal stakeholder process going forward is. But with regard to how we got, you know, this bill as opposed to last year's bill, I think one of the things that we said quite a lot last year with the legislation that was passed is that it was just a start. I think not just DNR, but a lot of the stakeholders indicated that it was a good start, but they thought that more needed to be done. And then, as I said earlier, with continuing discussions we've had with citizens and with representatives of local governments and some of the experiences we had last year with how the law worked and some things that happened, it really was a combination of those things that gave rise to this proposal.
Thank you. Follow-up, Representative Jaskowski.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Hirsch, Mr. Hirsch, can you give us a list of the people who are on that stakeholder group, where they live, which group they represent, any details you can. I would suspect that the average boat owner in Wabasha County or Winona County is probably not represented in that group. Members, I think we need to take a look at where these efforts are coming from. It seems to me that we have a group with a very focused interest working through the legislature to express those interests onto the rest of Minnesotans, and I struggle. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Jaskowski. Representative Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I see that we've got some representatives from local government here, and I know that they aren't on the agenda, but maybe they would be willing to come down and offer some comments about how they would deal with these additional requirements if they would so choose, and just what the cost or resource requirements would be to those local units of government. I think that would be useful information to have.
And I, Representative Falk, that's a good point. Director Hirsch, this is a voluntary thing for local units of government, and you're willing to potentially cost share with them. This is not going to be a mandate on local units of government. It is at their request that they're coming to you, and it would only be voluntary. You're not going to make any of them participate, are you? Director Hirsch.
Mr. Chair, yes to all those questions.
Pardon me?
The answer is yes to all those.
Okay. Representative Falk, does that help you out? Or there are some local, if you want one of the people from the counties or cities to come down and confirm that, we can do that.
Right. Well, I mean, I understand that right now it is voluntary, but I guess there is some, I mean, I share some concerns like Representative Jaskowski too, whereas this may be a process where we're moving more towards mandates, but let's just go and say that a local unit decides to partner with the DNR in this enforcement action, and they realize that they no longer want to take on that responsibility, or they're no longer equipped to deal with it effectively, then what is the role? What is the process? Does the DNR have to come in and take on that in its entirety afterwards? Or there's a lot of unknowns here, so I want some more clarity.
Okay, that's a good point. As we deal with this issue, ongoing, I think that's a good point, Director Hirsch. How would you deal with it if they just got overwhelmed, didn't feel they could help any longer, or they tried to bite off more than they could chew? How would you deal with it as this thing continues to explode and unfortunately zebra mussel go into other lakes, and all of a sudden maybe a county that thought it had two lakes because unfortunately somebody moved a dock that was still wet or a boat that from one lake to another, this could continue to explode if we don't begin to address it. So those are some of the concerns Representative Falk, I think, will have going forward. Additional comments on that point, Director Hirsch?
Mr. Chair and Representative Falk, it's a very good point. I think one of the things that we've tried to do in the legislation is make sure that there's a number of criteria that we would look at in reviewing plans for a local unit of government that wanted to take this on. I personally think it's very important that if and when we start to implement some of these more comprehensive control measures, that we have to do our homework. We have to figure out what's needed. We can't do this in a half-baked fashion and have people waiting in line, that, you know, three-hour lines and things like that, or having people that are inspected and found to have things and have no decontamination facilities available and things like that. So I think we're trying to do everything we can to make sure that when it does get implemented, it gets implemented right. But if a local unit of government finds itself having bitten off more than it can chew, you know, I'm not sure what we'd have to tack that on a case-by-case basis.
Thank you. Representative Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Before I get to my clarifying question, I am curious. We're covering part of this, and I know it's large and going to go over several days, but I want to be assured that we'll be able to discuss the deletions on 1223 through 1226, because that concerns me.
Director Hirsch, can you comment on the deletion on those lines?
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry.
Director Hirsch, it says the commissioner must report to the legislative chairs on environment finance on the outcomes of the land records management support. Director Hirsch, this could be part of an effort that I brought forward that unfortunately I'm inundated on from your department and MPCA on reports that I believe no one ever reads other than someone sitting back in a cubicle that isn't concerned about the issue or whatever. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with this specific report, but to Representative Qualm's point, at some point we are going to review all the different reports and how much it's costing and who's actually looking. And Representative Qualm, I think we're going to be able to get some actual numbers and hits that of people outside the agencies that are actually looking at these reports. I'm trying to follow up on that to see if only the people that are looking at it are the people that made the report, and does anybody actually read them? And I don't know, Director Hirsch, if this one's one of yours, it might be a different department's.
Mr. Chairman, it's not. I'm not familiar with
it. Well, we're going to get more information on these reports. It's a good question, Representative Qualm, but Representative Wagenius may have been more diligent than myself in reading these hundreds of reports we get that are literally hundreds of pages long and cost tens of thousands of dollars to produce. Representative Qualm, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, it wasn't to the essence. It was just I didn't see that as being a trivial thing, that, and I wanted to make sure we're discussing it. Back on to the topic of invasive species, aquatic species. I'd like partnering with local government. In my area of the state, we do not have a great deal of lakes. And frequently, when you go to those lakes, you notice it's a community. Everybody knows everyone. And I'm just curious about what the safeguards are so that if you do allow local control with some of the things that Representative Druskowski brought up, where you could have a boat pulled off, what is the safeguard to prevent the local people from harassing non-community members to sort of de facto make it a private lake? You know, I like the intent of cooperation and empowering, but I also want to know what reassurances and safeguards prevent possible abuse.
Director Hirsch.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Kwan, that's a great question, and I think two things. First of all, we would only be delegating this authority to local units of government, not to, you know, people that are not affiliated with the actual government unit. And then second of all, if you look at some of the detail that we've got under the provision where we can delegate the authority, we've got a number of criteria there. There's a plan that we would review. We would make absolutely sure that, as a department, that this did not become a way of privatizing or excluding people from lake access. We've said all along that any prevention measures that we put in place have to maintain public access to the state lakes. That's an integral part of the state's culture, and we do not want to hinder that in any way.
Thank you. Members, I have three more questions. This bill will be coming back. It is the DNR policy bill. It does include things other than AIS. Representative Palm just asked one of the questions. Director Hirsch is here today just to address the AIS part. The rest of the bill will be back before us, and we will spend a good amount of time discussing all the different things in it. And as a courtesy to the administration, I put the bill forward and authored it. That does not mean I support every individual provision in the bill. There's a number of things that I brought forward to the agency I think that are problematic, and we're going to continue to work on them. I have Representative Knuth, Representative Purcell, and Representative Hansen, and then we're going to move on. We've got some public testimony, and then we are going to try and very quickly touch on Representative Wagenius's bill. But Representative Wagenius, we may have to skip you and go straight to Colonel Price. Representative Knuth.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And the question is sort of preceded by more of a philosophical conversation. When we talk about AIS and freedom and government overreach and people's liberties, you know, it can get wrapped up in some pretty strong language that elicits strong feelings. But I think on the other side of boat inspections and fees and requiring people to do certain things is my freedom and my constituents' freedom to enjoy clean lakes free of invasive species. And you know, I used to live on a creek where I could go to sleep at night in the spring and literally hear carp splashing in the water. Not the Asian carp, but a previous invasive species. And you know, I think we've all paddled on lakes or tried to get plants off of the rudders of our boats, or tried to swim and gotten caught up in different plants. And they're also part of the concern. We're not just talking about Asian carp here or zebra mussels. We're also talking about plants, which can have huge impacts on the quality of lakes. And so I think AIS is clearly a place where our government has a role, because I think none of us can prevent the spread of these species either to the body of water we care most about or to lakes or streams or rivers as a whole. And so I think this is clearly a place where government has a role to make the quality of life better for all Minnesotans. And the question isn't, should we let government get bigger or make it smaller? The question is, how do we have the right laws to make sure that the quality of life for Minnesotans that we can't is maintained in these waters that we value so much, and in a way through some processes that we can't frankly do as individuals. I think we clearly have a role for some legislation and some regulation here. And so my question is, how do we do that well? And I think you've clearly gone through a process trying to bring in different people and different perspectives. And you're looking both at education and different kinds of education, so, you know, through the online, through the sticker, through inspections, through, frankly, some penalties. And I'm curious if, you know, you had people bring forward these ideas. Have you looked to other states? Have you looked to other places where they've been successful about the sort of the right balance of education requirements and penalties? How did you kind of put this package together in addition to bringing the stakeholders together, which I appreciate that you've done? And then you've said previously Minnesota is generally viewed as doing this better than other places, but are there places that you think are doing it really well right now that we could also be learning from?
Director Hirsch, any further comments?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Knuth. Yes, we've certainly looked at other states. Again, the Midwestern states like Michigan and Wisconsin that have a resource more similar to ours and access more similar to ours, their programs aren't as well developed as ours. And we have looked to the Western states to look at their specific programs for inspections and decontamination to get an idea of how that's done. In terms of trying to package up a balance between education and enforcement and penalties and that sort of thing, that's been a kind of an evolution. I think our program started off, this program has been around now for just about two decades in the DNR, and I think we started off, much more in an educational realm and just trying to get people more aware of the issue. But as infestations have increased, particularly a few years ago when we started to see the jump in zebra mussels, we really were able to hold zebra mussels kind of at bay for a long time. They were in the Mississippi River and they were in St. Louis River and Lake Superior. They were in a few other places, but we seemed to have pretty good luck at keeping them at bay, and then all of a sudden they got in the lake off the Winnemucca, in the early 2000s, and then all of a sudden they started showing up in some of these higher profile lakes, and then that really increased the citizen concern, and then a lot of people just weren't satisfied anymore with the strictly educational approach and wanted us to get tougher, wanted us to do more inspections. We've got the laws that we've got in place are really a very good regulatory structure already. If everybody followed the law all the time, which of course almost never happens with any law, but if they did, there would be very little spread of AIS. So we've got a pretty good regulatory structure in place now. What we're really trying to do now is see how we can increase compliance with the law. And, it's partially education, and then it's carrot and stick pole. And we're just trying to find the right balance based on a lot of the feedback we've been getting.
Thank you. Representative Purcell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. A comment and a question here, and I just want to say, Representative Drazkowski, your concern for local taxpayers, business and property, and residential taxpayers is almost brings a tear to my eye, my friend, and the homestead tax credit comes to mind. I believe that, these are public waters. You, Representative Drazkowski, you own a piece of Lake Bemidji. So do I. So is everybody in here. And we have to look at it. That's the way we set things up in this state. We own those resources. We're all responsible for them. And if we don't come together and manage these resources in the best interest of everybody in the state and everybody that comes into our state and recreates here, the legacy we're leaving our kids and grandkids is just abysmal. I think at minimum we should be looking at these containment zones. We know it seems reasonably where the zebra mussels are reasonably. I'm surprised. I didn't know they were in Ossawinamakee, and I know that's a lake that is near and dear to our chairman's heart. And it's connected down to the Gull Lake, if I remember my watershed correctly. So it doesn't surprise me that we keep finding them in a watershed by watershed basis, and that they're being transported. And if we don't have some kind of containment, it's we may end up living with them anyway. We may. And same thing with the carp. The carp haven't got up to our waters yet. They aren't above Grand Rapids, as I understand it, in the Mississippi River. But they're in other waters below there. And we don't want those carp up there. I said the other day, and if we get those Asian carp up there and go water skiing, yeah, that might be kind of fun to ice fish and spear in some of those lakes we opened up there. If you got those carp, they're going to jump out of the water. Maybe we can, that might be a kind of a fun deal. You can kind of hit them when they're coming out of the water. I don't know. But, yeah, I'm sorry, I'm being facetious here. But it's serious stuff. What tourism's what, $11 billion industry in this state a year? Something like that. This is serious stuff. Who's going to come up and want to maybe some people want to go carp fishing. I don't know. We used to shoot them with bow and arrow when I was a kid. You know, that's kind of fun. But we need to do something. And I don't want to pass anything down to local governments and our taxpayers locally. I do like the idea, though, of why can't we involve local folks? Why can't we involve watershed districts, lake associations? Absolutely. The people that are there looking at this stuff day in, day out, and give a care. They really do. So let's figure out what to do, because this is all of our resources.
Thank you for those comments, Representative Purcell. I have five public testifiers. Thank you, Director Hirsch, and we look forward to you coming back, and just keep a tough skin. I have a Mr. Snyder, a Mr. Diamond, Jabor, Forrester, and Mr. Ness. If any of you are together with each other, you could come to the testifiers table in that order. If Mr. Snyder's alone, just come ahead by yourself. But the other ones, I think some of you may be together. If you're not, that's fine. Just come. We'll start with Mr. Snyder and Mr. Diamond, if you could be ready. I'm going to hold you to 1 to 2 minutes, and I'm going to actually hold you to that. When I bang the gavel, it's because 2 minutes have gone on, and you'll stop your comments, and then we'll go to the next person. Please introduce yourself for the record.
Good. Mr. Chair, Mr. and members of the committee, my name is Joe Schneider. I'm a resident of Chanhassen. Thanks for letting me speak today. I believe that much is right with the DNR's proposed legislation. These changes allow for cost-effective measures to be put in place to stop the spread of aquatic invasive species. If you focus just on zebra mussels, you're missing the game. We have focused on individual species in the past, and we have missed the opportunity to stop the next ones from coming. So please, don't just think zebra mussels. Think about quagga mussels and the next things that are coming. I think there's one thing that needs to be changed in the proposed legislation. I think there are two things that need to be added. And then I'm going to end with an urge for urgency. Because if you don't all have visual facts behind this, battleground for aquatic invasive species, and specifically zebra mussels, is Minnesota today. Every state to the east of us has lost the battle already. So we are the battleground, and it is now. And so you have to get legislation in now if you're going to fight this. So what needs to be changed? The first thing that needs to be changed is the decontamination requirement for local governments if they want to use a multi-lake inspection facility. That doubles the annual operating cost, and it's the wrong answer. For those of you that want to create jobs, do decontamination as a third-party job creation. Don't build government to do it. You could do it today. The protocols exist. The two things that need to be added. I think you have to have, and this is going to be the most controversial piece, but I think you have to have the ability for unattended access controls at the landing. If you do that in conjunction with multi-lake inspections, you have the opportunity to dramatically reduce the price. Lastly, nobody's talking about wakeboard boats, and they are perhaps the fastest growing segment of the boating industry. They break your Minnesota laws today. They carry water from lake to lake, and if we don't get retrofits required for wakeboard boats, we will continue to transfer aquatic invasive species from lake to lake.
Thank you, Mr. Snyder. Next, we'll hear from Mr. Diamond. We're going to hold questions till all the testifiers, so if you could stay available in case anybody has a question for you. Welcome, Mr. Diamond, if you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Tom Diamond, speaking for myself. First, I'd like to thank the chair and the committee for their attention to this really serious issue for our natural resources. I think the important thing is to have some flexibility. We've learned already very quickly that last session there was $16 million allocated for the Coon Rapids Dam, and now it's up to $17.8 million, and we know that from the reports that will fail probably in 3 to 10 years. We also know that now we have testimony that we can provide 200% effective alternatives at St. Anthony and Ford for less money. There's a question whether that can be implemented. We also have our congressional delegation who's seeking a no-cost alternative to keep the locks closed. There's a number of issues on the table, and we don't have all the facts here. And I don't think you'll probably have the time in this session to work through all the issues. For example, there was testimony that there's $4.5 million that could be available for congestion of relief for funding these projects. But the study that was cited to justify that has been discredited, and the MnDOT's got the other reports that discredit that report that are more recent reports. So there's a lot of variables, but the issue is very critical and needs to be addressed. So I would urge you to provide funding to get the job done, but provide flexibility so as we learn what our options are, we can move that funding where it is most effective to do the job. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Diamond. Next, Mr. Jabbour, and I apologize if I trash your name. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. You did not trash my name. I'm Gabriel Jabbour. I lived in Orono for the past 4 years. I served every possible position and at city government, including the mayor of Orono. I own 4 marinas and a small boat manufacturer. I commend the DNR and this committee about what they've been doing the last couple of years. And I spoke with you, Mr. Chairman, and I would like to share with the committee that I'm very concerned about the existing law, that there's a gap in it. The existing law is based on the fact that if you're receiving revenue and you are for hire, you must take certain certification classes. There's a big gap in the law because there's, I'm sorry, I'm trying to speak very fast and that's working against me. All the boat clubs, which move lots of boats around, and all the yacht clubs, which bring in thousands and thousands of boats in on the lake, particularly Lake Minnetonka, are exempt from such measures. And, you know, we as businessmen would really like to keep government out of our life, but in this situation, we're asking government to be in our life because this issue is much bigger than we are. And we as a private sector would like to be part of the solution and provide our facility for the DNR, as we have done for the past 10 years, or provide it for the University of Minnesota. I'm partnering with you on particularly in the decontamination issue. So I'd like the committee to think that there is a place for the private sector to be involved into some of those issues, part of the solution. When I started in 1972, it was my goal to leave the resource better than I found it. In 1989, I started realizing that my goal in life, to leave the resource for my children and grandchildren, is not going to be obtained if we are following in the path that we have been in for years past. I'm sorry, I have a hard time speaking that fast.
No, you did a good job, and thank you for your commitment to public service in this state, and especially your commitment as an entrepreneur and what you've done. We appreciate all that kind of work, and we really value your input. If you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent.
Sure. My name is Eric Evenson. I'm the administrator of the Minnehaha Creek Watershed District. And, you know, I'm very fortunate to have people like Mr. Jabbour and folks from Christmas Lake and others in my watershed district to help us work on this issue. This is clearly something that the state cannot do alone. It is something, and I do appreciate the changes in the legislation that provide for more of an opportunity for local partnerships. I would encourage you, as you look at this legislation, to provide, as is written, it's a fairly prescriptive approach to these partnerships. I would encourage you to take a look at it and to help us develop partnerships where we can capitalize on our respective strengths. There are things that I can't do well in my watershed district that the state can do better. There's things that a private sector can do much better than I can do. So I think as we look at this, we need to create flexibility to in the legislation so each of us can work and do what we do best.
Thank you for your comments. Appreciate that. Next, I've got Mr. Forrester and Mr. Ness. Welcome, Mr. Forrester. If you could identify yourself for the record and who you represent. And Mr. Ness, welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jeff Forrester, and I represent Minnesota Seasonal Recreational Property Owners, so cabin owners. Thank you for having this hearing, and thanks to the DNR for bringing forward this bill. While we generally support many of the provisions in the agency bill, we have concerns with potential delegation of all the responsibility and financial obligations to the local units of government. We believe that without a strong statewide approach and financial commitments from the state, local units will be forced to raise revenue in their jurisdictions and could create a patchwork of measures that create winners and losers in the fight against AIS in our shared public waters. The implications of infestations are grave. Property values diminish and local tax bases are reduced. And there's a growing concern. The longer this, you know, over the last 3 or 4 years, the volume of emails that I get from people that are concerned about this continues to grow. We stand committed to work with the DNR and all interested legislators going forward to ensure preservation of our public water against this threat through thoughtful approaches and sound investments. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Forrester. Welcome, Mr. Ness.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Lance Ness. I'm president of Anglers for Habitat and also president of Fish and Wildlife Legislative Alliance, sportsmen's groups. Just a couple quick comments, Mr. Chairman and committee. I'll keep my comments very short. But we believe that, you know, two things really need to happen to keep these things at bay. One is public education. We've got to teach people to clean their boats, clean their lifts, not move these things around. That's going to be a big deal. We've got to get people to do that. I bet everyone brushed their teeth today. That's what we've got to do. We've got to brush our boats. We've got to keep them clean. It's just a matter of keeping things out of here. And finally, I just want to talk a little bit about the USGS facility down in La Crosse, Wisconsin, on French Island. They are, you know, probably the leading group that's investigating ways to actually exterminate and control Asian carp, zebra mussels, and other things that are coming. That's the other thing that needs to happen is research. We've got to put some money into research so we can not only can we control these things, perhaps we can eliminate them. That's my comment, Mr.
Thank you. Thank you for all the testifiers. And to the audience, if there are other folks that want to speak for or against this bill, there will be another opportunity to hear on both sides of the issue. Any questions by any members for any of the testifiers? Representative Canute.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the first testifier, I was just curious. I'm not sure what he was referencing with the wakeboarding boats and if that's something we need to be concerned about. I just wanted to hear a little bit more.
Mr. Director Hirsch, are you here? If you could come down. Representative Canute, Director Hirsch will be able to address the wakeboard issue better. But members, just so you know, wakeboards, the kids that have wake, they're not all kids. I mean, I don't know if anybody's my age doing it, but the boats are made to allow them to take water on and off to adjust the amount of wake and such. And DNR does specifically address some of the issues. I'm not sure that a total true picture was given by the testifier because you do have language in the current regulations telling people how to deal with it. Director Hirsch.
Mr. Chair, Representative Knuth, that's correct, but the wakeboard boats, I think the reason that Mr. Schneider brought those to attention is they have a lot of ballast water on board. I'm actually not that familiar with them, but I know they can have gallons and gallons of ballast water. And these are the big boats that people, these aren't the jet skis, these are the big boats that people wakeboard behind that have the large thing on the end that sticks way up that they attach to. And they have a lot of water. And they're more difficult to decontaminate because they're more difficult to flush. And one of the issues is you can't see if they're drained or not. So the western states that do this will tell you that these are some of the most difficult and long, time-consuming boats to decontaminate.
And Director Hirsch, will you please provide to the committee the link to the part of the current law that tells folks how to deal with that and suggests they go to their manufacturer if they're not completely dewatered to help them in trying to deal with the law? Other questions for any of the testifiers? Representative Anderson.
Thanks. Just a quick question, Mr. Chair. Mr. Jabbour mentioned the thousands of boats to help them in trying to deal with the law. Other questions for any of the testifiers? Representative Anderson.
Thanks. Just a quick question, Mr. Chair. Mr. Jabbour mentioned the thousands of boats that would be exempt. What's the reason for that?
Director Hirsch, can you talk about how a boat marina may have a regatta on Lake Minnetonka, and under current law, the people moving those boats would not be subjected as if they were from a different facility? Director Hirsch.
Mr. Chairman and Representative Anderson, I think what Mr. Jabbour was referring to is we've got the provisions in place for lake service providers, which are people that move boatlets and docks for a living, but there's this whole other group of people that move a lot of boats around commercial marinas and things like that that don't fall into that definition. So his concern is that there's this
there's these groups, these commercial marinas, or these yacht clubs that are also moving boats around that are that present a high risk of spread that aren't really covered by that permitting and training and permitting requirement that we put on the lake service providers last year.
And to clarify, lake service providers are moving docks and boat lifts mostly, and the other group that Mr. Jabor was talking about are actually moving boats in and out of the water. So he's recommending it be expanded to include the movement of boats, not the other two groups. Thank you. Next, Colonel Price, I think we'll go into you, and if we have time, we'll do Representative Wagenius's bill at the end. Representative Wagenius is here every day, and Colonel Price, you're not, so we're going to move into your discussion. Colonel Price is here. Members, we're going to shift gears a little bit to a different invasive species. It's the Asian carp issue. Representative Hackbart's got a bill to put electric barriers on potentially up to three lock and dams, and all three of them are under the control of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. Colonel Price, if you could identify yourself for the record, and I don't know if you have some presentation. I'm hopeful you can give a little bit, or are you just going to stand for questions? Colonel Price.
Well, good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee. Thank you for having given me the opportunity to speak to you this morning about this problem that's approaching the borders of Minnesota. I don't have a presentation, but I'll go over some talking points. If I did have a presentation, I'd get into OMB and some authorities, and we don't want to go there. So I'll just talk and then open up to the committee for questions, if that's okay with you, Mr. Chairman.
That's fine. Go ahead, Colonel.
All right, so the bottom line is the Corps operates locks and dams. I currently operate in the St. Paul District 13 locks and dams on the upper Mississippi River. And the primary purpose of those that are congressionally authorized are for the purpose of navigation. I do not have the authority to shut down my locks and dams if it frustrates or does not allow navigation unless there's a concern for safety. So the bottom line is I do not have the authority to shut my locks for the spread of Asian carp. However, I do have the discretion to manage my locks in a manner that could help slow or prevent the control of aquatic species within the authorities I have for maintaining navigation. Three locks in the Twin Cities last year, about 700,000 tons of cargo passed through the upper three locks. And in the upper two locks, St. Anthony locks, about 2,000 recreational boats. 71,000 passengers were on excursion boats in the upper two locks. And in lock one, we had about 3,200 lockages for recreational traffic. The DNR and I have been in discussion on this problem. We've been partnering for the last several months along with the governor in his summit, and that's been the main way we've been coordinating this nuisance species approaching our borders. The question has come up of, do I have the authority to build a deterrent barrier? And the answer is yes. In the 2007 Water Resources Development Act, in Section 5016, the Corps was authorized to study, design, and construct a deterrent barrier around Lock and Dam 11, but it could be anywhere on the upper Mississippi. That authorization was for $4 million, although Congress has never appropriated any dollars for us to conduct that study, and design, and construction. So the authority exists. There's been no appropriations since 2007. The other question has been, can a DNR or any other entity build a project on our facility? And the answer is yes, and there's a process for that. It's under 33 U.S. Code Section 408. It authorizes the Secretary of Army to permit alterations or modifications to existing core projects. There is a process for that, and it starts with the state or whatever entity would like to modify or alter our project to present a plan, and that there's a lot of parts to that plan, and then the time starts. And we have a process that goes through me to Major General Peabody, the Mississippi Valley Division Commander, and it goes all the way up to the Chief of Engineers, at this point is Major General Temple. That process, project plan, would require all the necessary permits, whether it's state or federal permits. And when we get that process or that project plan, we will look at it and ensure it meets all safety and is compliant with the National Environmental Policy Act, or NEPA. That process will take approximately 6 months. There's never been a project of this magnitude tried on any of the locks and dams and anywhere in the navigable waters in the United States. We do these kind of modifications to levee districts, and another example is a hydropower plant that we have on all of our locks and dams in the upper Mississippi. There are safety concerns, and I'll answer questions on that, for an electric barrier on our locks and dams. We have no electric barrier at any of the locks and dams at any of our rivers. And we've been in discussion with the Lakes and Rivers Division, and specifically the Chicago District, who's been very experienced in deterrent barriers and electric barriers since about 2002. So they've been doing a lot of studies. The Core Lab in Vicksburg, Mississippi, and Prell have done extensive studies on what levels of voltage is required to deter or prevent the movement of Asian carp. We've also contracted with the Naval Experimental or Expeditionary Diving Unit to determine what risks there are to humans if they are immersed in waters. And I can discuss a little bit about that. So with that, I'll leave it there, and I can talk operations costs that Chicago's experiencing and what they paid to construct their three barriers that they operate. Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for the start, Colonel Price. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colonel Price, the six-month period for doing the evaluation, what is required to initiate that? Do you have the authority to begin that on your own, or does that take an act of the legislature here, or can a gubernatorial request start that process for the six-month evaluation for putting barriers within the locks?
Colonel Price, if I can just add to that, you talked about evaluating this since 2002, so I would imagine we could have built this 9 years ago, so I'm assuming the 6 month is way beyond and we could get going on this right away. So if you can elaborate why looking at it since 2002 doesn't count at all.
Mr. Chairman and Rep. Hansen, to get to your question, to start the process, we need a project proposal, and that can come from the state DNR, come from the governor, come from the legislature, but some entity, and presumably would come from the Minnesota DNR, would present a project plan to us that complies with all those requirements. And we've met with the DNR, Commissioner Landwehr, Director Hirsch, and his staff, and talked them through that process.
Follow-up, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Colonel, that you're just requiring a plan. You don't need an appropriation or anything. You need a plan.
Well,
Colonel Price.
Mr. Chairman and Rep. Hansen, I assume that plan would come with some appropriation. Otherwise, there'd be no project. And that plan has got to be a detailed engineering design, and then the Corps will look at, again, compliance and safety concerns.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to note for the record that we did authorize the Department of Natural Resources in 2008 $500,000 for design and pre-design that they could work with the federal government to do all options, not just a specific barrier. So we passed that 4 years ago, and we could have had it. You were talking 8 years ago, but this legislature acted in 2008. To do design and pre-design and develop a plan. And here we are in 2012.
Mr. Chairman, I'll answer your question about
Colonel Price.
2002. The Chicago District was authorized a deterrent barrier to prevent the goby, the round goby, from leaving the Great Lakes into the Illinois River into the Mississippi. So that was about 2002 when they began that. So from that, their experiences have blossomed and expanded to the prevention of Asian carp from the Illinois waterways into the Great Lakes.
So, Colonel, if I can understand, a long time ago, somebody made a really stupid move and put some Asian carp in some ponds down in Mississippi to feed or whatever. It would clean their ponds out, and they ended up coming up the river. And years ago, the wisdom of our country was to put in the lock and dam system, which you operate, which unfortunately allows these carp a step up to move through here. So you've been watching them come up and up. You've had a system in operation for a number of years on the Chicago Ship Canal, and you're right, it's not a lock and dam. It's a ship canal, and you've got experience there. The governor, Senator Klobuchar, sat in a meeting with us and said how they want to work together to get this thing moving. Representative Hackbart's reacted, put a bill on. Lassard Sam's council has reacted and funded this in a major league way. So our state's going to step up and fund this thing that the Fed should be doing. You guys built the lock and dams and sent the doggone fish up the river to us, and you've been watching it for 10 years, and now you're telling me you got to think about it for six more months? Why are we not passing the bill now? 30 days, we get it signed by the governor, and you guys, there's no boats coming through Hastings until late March. Why aren't we doing it right now? So because you're the federal government and a big bureaucracy, you can't react? I mean, you people got to care about this. You don't want to be moving those fish up the river. I don't get it where it's always, well, it should take 5 years to study it, and we should have a bunch of money. People expect us to do the right thing. You've been working on this for 10 years. Are people getting killed on the Chicago Ship Canal? Have anybody fallen in and gotten killed by the electricity there?
Mr. Chairman, I'll answer a number of your questions. First, I am not familiar with anyone who's died on the barrier in Chicago. I know that there have been studies that says if a human is immersed into the water, neck level, in the Chicago barrier, there's a 50% chance that he would die. And I forwarded that study to the DNR, and I'm happy to present it to the committee.
Well, I would hope you would, Colonel, because that is a definite concern for us. But I will tell you, we want you to move forward in an expeditious way, and I don't mean to belittle you. I don't want to do that. I appreciate you coming here. I warned you we were going to bomb you. At least I think I did. And we just want you to work together. I think this is an opportunity for the Corps of Engineers, which so many people think of as a huge bureaucracy that can't react. Unfortunately, the doggone carp are at our front door right now, and we'd like to do something. And so we don't want you being the one that says, no, we can't do anything because we're this huge bureaucracy that has to sit back and wait and study it, and we need money. That's not what people today want to hear. They want to hear, hey, the Corps is coming over. We're going to meet with the DNR. We're going to meet with folks. We're concerned about their safety. We better be. But that doesn't mean you've already been working. These things have been in place for 10 years. What have we learned? We've got one out in Minnesota. Representative Hackbart, is it at Heron Lake? It's in deep water and a wide, I believe, in a size when they talked about it, similar to the Hastings Lock. So, Colonel, I'm blasting away here a little bit because it is frustrating for us because we all want to step forward, and we hope that you're willing to work with us. And I'm going to let the other folks ask a question unless you want to just direct something short back at me. Go ahead.
Well, Mr.
Colonel
Price. Chairman, thank you. And we are working with all partners, and we are moving forward. This topic has not reached the St. Paul District until the fall. So since the fall, we've been working closely with the DNR, National Park Service, the governor, and all the entities to get to find a solution. And yes, we are a bureaucracy. The federal government is a bureaucracy, and I'm part of that. And we have laws we have to abide by, and we have to do that. And we're going to move through that as quickly as we possibly can. But the bottom line is I can't even begin my faraway process until I receive a package in my hand that says, here's the project we want to complete. So if I have that, we'll start our process. And I'm sorry, but a bill doesn't tell me all the engineering details on what that project would look like. We have to look at impacts to the social, economic, and to the navigation, the congressionally authorized purpose of our locks and dams is navigation. And so even when they built the projects in Chicago, it took a number of years to get that done. So we're ready to move forward. And we've worked this week. We've met with the Chicago and District on Monday with the DNR, and we talked to a bunch of issues, and we're moving forward.
Well, thank you, Colonel, and I appreciate that. That sends a different message to me than the one that you're waiting for a packet of written something or other. The people aren't waiting for more packets. And to say, well, you know, we weren't aware of this until this fall, I'm sorry, as Representative Hansen said, but this has been coming up. It's been moving through the locks. Enough said. Thank you, Colonel. Representative Fabian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colonel Price, thank you for being here. Just to kind of do a little spin off, I live in northwestern Minnesota, and I must tell you, and I know that this is a little bit off topic, I deal with county engineers, I deal with road authorities and so forth, and one of the biggest obstacles that we have in northwest Minnesota to getting good projects done is the Army Corps. I would urge you to make sure that your agency becomes more responsive and more responsible to the people. That being said, I'd like to go back to what you said about the Chicago office being experienced in this area. Could you repeat that for me, please? Because what I want to do is I want to segue to how effective have they been with regards to these problems?
Colonel Price.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Fabian. the Chicago District's been working, and a barrier by itself is just a barrier. You don't know how effective it is unless you have some telemetry. And what the Chicago District has done, they've got telemetry on fish. They've tagged 180 fish over the last 4 or 5 years, and they've been tracking them. And they've got over 3 million hit on where those fish have moved in the system in the Chicago area waterways. And none of those tagged fish have moved on the other side of that barrier. So the barriers, the three barriers that are operating and two, three operated at all times, are effective against fish moving through the water column across the barrier.
Thank you, Colonel Price. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you. I wanted to know more about what's going on in Chicago. What was the price of what happened in Chicago? Just tell us a little bit more about it. Is that something that you think would work here in your locks? Give us a little guidance.
Colonel Price.
Chairman, Representative Wagenius, Chicago District has built three barriers. They had a demonstration barrier costing $3 million to construct. They put that in operation in 2002. They built barrier 2A, cost them $10 million. That was completed in 2009. And barrier 2B cost them $23 million to construct, and that was completed in 2011. The difference there is they have an open channel. They have rock on each side of their engineered channel. Their channel is 165 feet wide, and the water column is 25 feet deep. The parameters they operate are, they have a pulsating DC current. They have 2.3 volts per inch at 30 hertz, and the pulse length is about 2.5 milliseconds long. Those parameters were validated by ERDC and Krell and subcontract to Smith and Root. And Smith and Root did a study, and we also shared that with the Minnesota DNR. And that's the optimal parameter to prevent the movement of Asian carp across an electric barrier. And the size of fish that they were targeting were fish two inches and greater.
Thank you. Follow-up, Representative Wagenius. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. When your barrier there in Chicago, if we were to have something comparable at Hastings, could we do that? Is it would the pricing be in the same range, do you think?
Colonel Price.
Mr. Chairman, at Hastings, at Lock and Dam 2, I think the channel width is about 800 feet long, so the price would go up based on the anodes and the engineering behind that. The biggest cost to them is the electrical equipment that's on land. In their operations costs, let me cover that briefly now so we get an understanding of how much they pay for operations and maintenance. And mind you, they operate 24 hours a day, every day, so their costs are a little bit higher. But they have some electric costs and then their O&M costs. At the demonstration barrier, which is operating at a much lower voltage at 1 volt per inch, is $700,000 per year. And barrier 2A is $3 million per year, and 2B is $3.5 million per year for operations and maintenance.
Colonel Price, if I could elaborate, when you talked about Hastings, you weren't talking about the lock width. You were talking about electrifying the entire river because Hastings only serves as a barrier once a decade or whatever. It can, the locks, the gates get open, and then the fish could bypass there instead of. In normal operations, the only water is going through, the only place the fish could go through would be through the locks. The width of the lock in Hastings is how wide?
The lock width in Hastings is 112 foot.
Thank you, Colonel. Follow-up, Representative Wagenius.
Well, thank you. When I hear the price of the electricity, it doesn't scare me given the cost of having the car up the river. But I still am not... don't have a good comparison in my mind between what's going on in Illinois and what we could do at Hastings that would be reasonable. You said the cost would be more. Can you give us some
Colonel,
a little
do
bit
you want,
more
do you
guidance
want,
there?
Do you want to comment on if we were to electrify the entire width of the Mississippi above Lock and Dam too?
Mr. Chairman, we have not done the analysis to see how much it would cost to electrify the whole river, nor have we looked at the cost of electrifying a lock chamber or the approach to a lock chamber. But the width surely is a factor. But again, the majority of the cost is the electrical equipment that's on land that's electrifying the anodes. So I won't guesstimate on how much it would cost to put a barrier in at Hastings.
Thank you. We're going to have to get more information on that, Representative Wagenius, from manufacturers with the help of the Colonel and the help of the DNR. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I understand that there is a study coming from Met Council which would tell us about the cost if these carp actually got upriver. And I think that would be, when we're talking about the cost of the dam or electrifying that dam, or the river in Hastings, I think we need the comparison of what it would, the cost versus the benefit. And the benefit, in my guesstimation, is going to be humongous. And we haven't talked about that yet.
Thank you, Representative Wagenius. The other complication in this issue, members, is that the DNR does have eDNA hits above the dam. They have not documented that with actually finding any actual fish. But there has been DNA, eDNA found above the dam. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to follow up on Representative Hansen's comments about $500 million? $500,000 was given to the DNR for some planning regarding this issue, and I wondered if someone from the DNR could address that and give us an answer for where that money went.
Director Hirsch, could you comment on that bonding proposal and if any of that money was ever spent?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Scott, we did get that bonding proposal for $500,000, as Representative Hansen mentioned. I'm not sure why, but at that time we got, and this was before Colonel Price was a district commander, we got a different answer, and we made communications, I think, more at the staff level, and we did not get any indication back that the Corps could work with us on this because they didn't have an authorization and appropriation. So we did get a different answer back then. I'm not sure why. I'm glad we're getting a different answer now. But we since got the appropriation language changed for that $500,000 so we could use it for the Coon Rapids Dam improvement, and that's how we've been using those dollars.
Thank you, Director Hirsch. And Representative Hacker.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I know we're about out of time. First of all, I would like to say that at our last meeting, Mr. Griffin was here, and I think the chairman asked that the DNR work and the Corps work with Mr. Griffin and include him in meetings. And from what talking to Mr. Griffin, he's not been called by the DNR, and apparently you've had some meetings with the Corps since that time. And I think some of these questions could have been alleviated if he would have been at some of those meetings, and we could have worked out some kind of an agreement on some of these things. That being said, the Chicago area is a little bit different from what we're doing up in Minnesota, the Minnesota River. From what I understand, the water is kind of stagnant and doesn't have a lot of flow, and the electricity that they use there is a little bit higher than what we would use here in Minnesota. The electricity is on all the time, is that correct, Colonel, at Chicago? In Minnesota, when we would have these at just the locks, we would only turn on the electricity, so the cost of the electricity would be very inexpensive in Minnesota, because you turn the electricity on, you open the gate, you let the barge in, you close the gate, you let the barge out, and then you turn up and close the gate, and you turn off the electricity. So the electricity is only on when you open the gate. So the cost of the electricity is very reasonable. When we talk about the Hastings site, we're in the proposal, it was $6 million to do the lock at Hastings. And if we want to extend that and put that across the rest of the dam to solve the problem that we might have sometime in the next 10 to 12 years, we would put that in, and that's a cost of $20 million to electrify the whole dam. And that's just to put the electricity in and put the barrier there. But you don't turn on the electricity, and it's not on all the time. You only turn that on when the water level gets high enough for the fish to jump the dam. So you wouldn't have any cost for the electricity there for operation of that. Just to clarify some of the things that you're saying. So safety concerns, but I started to say that the water is pretty much stagnant in Chicago. Here we have a high flow. Here we have a high flow of electricity. If somebody were to fall in there, the strange, odd chance that something would happen, it's less electricity to start with, and
Not only that, there's a high flow of water. You're going to be pushed right out of there. I have to tell you that in Huron Lake, when Mr. Griffin was doing some maintenance on the facility there, he slipped into the electric barrier, and he was fine. He just came out of it and had no result from this at all. And there is documentation from some folks that fell into an electric barrier that 3.3 volts, I think, and I think it was Michigan River, something like that. I don't have the details, but I can get them. A couple of canoers that tipped over and fell into it, and they had virtually nothing happen to them. So there are some discrepancies here, and I think those things have to be ironed out, and we have to talk about some of these things because some of these things are contrary. So we have to include some people that have worked with these things in the past and include them in these talks. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you for those comments. Colonel Price, comment?
Mr. Chairman, I just want to clarify a few things. You talked about the flow and the safety concerns. When we operate our locks and open up the gates, there is very little flow. So the concern about someone falling into the water and flowing out of the electric barrier, that would not happen at our locks and dams because of the very, very low flow at the downstream approaching our locks and dams. Again, and I refer back to the Naval report about, and they got the readings on all the way down from 1 volt all the way up to 2.3 volts, and they got the parameters in there, and there's still a safety concern. Also, I'd like to highlight that on the Illinois waterway, the United States Coast Guard has enforced a navigational restriction on recreational boats on the, around the barriers. So they do not allow any boats under 22 feet long to traverse over the electric barriers. And that's the United States Coast Guard is the one who manages the surface water at all of our navigable waters, including the Mississippi River. So I'm certain that the Coast Guard would also apply a navigational restriction if an electric barrier is placed at anywhere on the Mississippi River.
And to Colonel, that's some of the challenges we have currently. An aluminum canoe or metal canoe is allowed to go through the lock and dams. We see them when they come down going through Hastings. They specifically do that, and they're going to be going over electricity. And I appreciate your concern with that follow-up, Representative Hackburn.
One other thing I just wanted to add, when this electricity is turned on and the electrodes are engaged, there's also, in Ms. Griffin's proposal, a wave that's created to help keep that fish off.
And the Colonel nodded, yes. Colonel, I really appreciate you coming here and taking what was some harsh comments from me. But let me ask this. Would it be helpful for us if we actually passed this funding package and moved it forward and got Governor Dayton's signature on that sooner rather than later? Did I understand that just us telling you that we want to do this is different than actually passing a funding package, understanding that you would need to continue to evaluate the safety? Is the reality, no matter what we do here, you're not going to be able to make this happen until next winter?
Mr. Chairman, that's a great question on timing of this thing. And for the record, the barriers in Chicago took about a year to construct. And again, they didn't have to remove any concrete to do that. In a lock chamber, you'll have to remove the lock walls. And we have, at St. Paul, and my chief of engineers has grave concerns about removing lock walls and how we do that. So there'd be some, we'd have some discussions with whatever contractor we do that. Other note, Chicago sole sourced the contract with Smith Roof. They have a proprietary products, and they installed the electrical components into the Chicago area waterways. Regarding the passing of a bill, based on the timing it will take for us to evaluate based on the engineering design, I won't comment on whether you should or should not. I will tell you that I don't foresee a barrier being built in any of our locks this NAV season.
Would you repeat that again?
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe that, regardless of which direction we go, I won't comment on whether you should or should not approve any legislation. I would just tell you that I do not believe that there will be any barrier built this NAV season based on some of the complexities that are involved in the other timings of things that have to happen.
Colonel, would you say that it's possible to build it next winter?
Mr. Chairman, it is possible, and again, in Chicago, they put the anodes in the wet, so they didn't have to build any copper dams, and we would have to look at the construction methods if there is one built in the lock.
Well, thank you, and I appreciate your willingness to work on it. Representative Wagenius is going to get the last question, and then Representative Falk is going to move the minutes. Representative Wagenius.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to make sure I understand correctly and the committee understands correctly. It's not just the money that we need to see on the table, but there has to be an engineering design on the table before you will begin your process. Am I correct about that?
Colonel Price.
Mr. Chairman and Rep. Wagenius, that is correct. We need to evaluate the proposal, the engineering design, and that has to have already complied with all the permits, local, state, in order for us to make sure it complies with NEPA.
Representative Wagenius.
Then, Mr. Chairman, I would hope that as part of our process, we figure out how much money it's going to cost to procure an engineering design that would be acceptable to the board.
Well, those are some of the challenges before this committee. Representative Falk.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Move approval of the minutes.
Discussion of the minutes. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Minutes are passed and members were adjourned.